Hello and welcome back to A Better World. This is your host, Mitchell J. Rabin, and I'm very glad you're joining us again today. We're going to be talking about something very important and very much on everybody's minds these days, perhaps more than ever, and that has to do with these fundamental ideas of sanitation, hygiene, and keeping clean. Yep. In the age of COVID, this is something that has become very much in the foreground. It's uppermost on everybody's minds. And so I have been lucky enough to come across an extraordinary company called Everest Microbial Defense, and I have invited the two founders of that company onto the show today to talk about the subject of cleaning, hygiene, and sanitation, and, well, what I like to call the next generation of it. It's something that has separated itself out in the marketplace because of its exceptional product line and its chemistry, the molecular structure of it. And we have the two people who are very involved in helping to market this internationally in our roundtable today to discuss this and educate us all about the strengths of what it is we have here that really is, you know, truly a game changer. So on that note, we have Mark Whaley, who began it, and Jay Johnson, who joined him. They are both consummate professionals in the field of cleaning. They both have backgrounds in science and engineering, as well as business. And they've combined these together to really put this word out, and they're getting themselves into some very high places in government, in business, in different institutions, and for good reason. What they have is really outstanding, and we'll be learning about more of that right now. So, Mark Whaley, welcome to A Better World, and Jay Johnson, both of you. I'm glad to have you both on.
Thank you, Mitchell. Good to be here.
Thanks, Mitchell. Good to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a moment of some celebration and otherwise a slightly dark time of America and actually even the world in having to deal with these issues of mask wearing and keeping the hands clean, washing them 10 or 12 times a day and all of this. So what you're bringing is truly a boon to the conversation, and I, for one, you know, very much appreciate it. After having reviewed your literature, tried the products myself, and I really, really so feel good, so good about it, I wanted to really have you both on. So, Mark, would you, with your extensive background in both science and in the world of cleaning and cleaning products, what is it that initially moved you to want to get involved with this product line?
Well, you know, being involved in cleaning, you know, for over 30 years, so I'm starting to get a little long in the tooth. But in the cleaning industry, one of the frustrations that I always have had, Mitchell, is that cleaning, disinfecting, sanitizing, et cetera, was all really geared around the a moment in time, right? It's just we get it done now, and now it's clean. But there was no expectation on our part that we could keep that it would stay clean. We knew we'd have to come back and redo that process over and over and over again. And so when I came across this technology, I knew it was a total game changer because it's designed to provide ongoing protection, lasting protection against germs, and actually enables the prevention of future contamination. So just a game changer. I knew I had to get involved with it because I just saw how it could literally change the industry.
God, I get it. I get it. That's a tremendous difference. Having something clean for a moment, that is, until it gets contaminated again, which could be the next moment, is
right.
What I hear you saying.
Right.
Yeah, we can.
And
yeah,
what is it that's going
to
keep it
lather
clean? Please?
Mitchell, it's kind of, this is Jay, it's kind of like a lather, rinse, repeat. you go through the process once, and as soon as you're done, you just have to do it again.
Yes, exactly. And who knows what kind of interference, germ, mildew, mold, virus, interference there can be in the meantime, which spoils the soup, right?
Exactly.
Quite literally, right? Jay, I'm glad you jumped in here. What is it that got you going? I mean, you've been in many different fields, including publishing. You've been in many different, wearing many different hats over your professional career. What is it that kind of ignited you about this?
Well, there's actually two things. The first thing was the technology, and the problem that the technology was solving is very unique in the space, and it's not something that is widely known, especially in the consumer space. And I'm of the firm belief that if this could be, was made known to the consumers, it could be a huge benefit. It's a game changer / paradigm shifter. And that just really, really excited me. Now, what goes along with that is that means there's significant challenges in terms of educating consumers and helping them understand that there literally is a better way. And then associated with that was the accompanying business challenges and business opportunities, not only for ourselves as a company, but for others in the industry, in this space specifically, as consumers became aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Understood. You bring up a very important point, which is that whenever there's a paradigm shift of, and I think that's a great way to describe what this is, there comes with a learning curve, and people need to get educated about what the real possibilities are, because we've been trained to think along the line you were describing, Mark, of now my hands are clean, now my body is clean, now my clothes are clean, now my countertop is clean, and next moment, I don't know. So it really does something to the mind. And well, what it does to the mind, it cleans the mind, I guess we could say. That's probably not a bad thing. The good side of brainwashing, you could say. bad joke. Sorry about that. Mark, would you go and just kind of walk us through this technology that you and Jay are referring to? It's on one hand, it's a bunch of elements combined in a certain way that forms a certain chemistry, and you describe it as a technology. Could you just unpack that a bit?
Yeah, so we do describe it as a technology because I think that term fits it best. But in essence, this technology is, at the nanoscale, right? So it's an invisible technology to the human eye. Much like, germs are invisible to the human eye, our technology is as well. But that's where the battle takes place, in the unseen part of our world. And this technology is it really is very different than literally everything else that's out there that has anything to do with disinfection. What it is, boils down to, is we have a molecule. That molecule is, in essence, it's a molecular spike. And so this spike is made up of carbon atoms, a nitrogen molecule, and a silane base molecule. It bonds to surfaces covalently and provides a lasting bond. And it attracts and then physically kills microbes of all kinds. So it instead of a chemical kill or a poison kill, which is the way disinfection has been handled throughout human history, is to in essence poison the germs so they can no longer harm us. The downside of that is the poisons used to harm the germs also are harmful to us. And so this takes it in a completely different direction.
It's sort of like chemotherapy in a certain way.
Yeah, it's,
it kills what you want it to kill, but it also kills everything around it.
Exactly. Yes. Now, ours is very different because it is a physical kill of the microbe, and it's a lasting protection on that surface. So, kind of a visual for you, Mitchell, would be this, is that if it's sprayed onto a surface, let's say the your countertop, sprayed onto that countertop, it's like applying a invisible field of molecular spikes. So there'll be literally millions of these molecular spikes that are all now bonded to that countertop. They don't leave the countertop. When you clean it, they don't wipe away. But they're there constantly protecting that surface. And the wonderful thing is, in a normal setting, in a normal surface like that, the protection will actually last up to 90 days.
Wow. That's extraordinary. And, you know, you can't hurt yourself by touching that surface with the spikes, can you?
No. In fact, you know, as I mentioned, it's invisible. They're invisible because they're so small that you can't see them. You would need an electron microscope to be able to see them.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm.
But because of their size, you know, the interaction with them, human interaction with them, is totally undetectable. So you can't see it on the surface. You can't feel it on the surface. It doesn't change the appearance at all. It doesn't change the feel of that surface. It doesn't change the way that you use that surface. It's just an underlying, always there protection. They're too small for us to bother us, but they're plenty big to totally bother germs because they don't leave the germs alone.
Right. Germs aren't that big either, so I guess they're commensurate with each other in that regard. Absolutely. Jay, you've described – thank you, Mark. That's very helpful in terms of imagery for me and for others to understand more of what's going on here when you say it's a mechanical kill. Jay, you've described it as bacteria, viruses, microbes, mildew, mold, fungus getting impaled on, you know, like little knives, little spikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
could you expand on that a bit?
I actually kind of liken it to a kebab skewer. As Mark had mentioned, this very small molecular field of spikes is laid down, but these have a charge associated with them, an electric charge, and they actually draw bacteria down onto them or microbes down onto them. And when they do, it's very much like a water balloon. You know, it just pops and explodes them. So they're basically rendered useless, and they can't mutate or change to try to avoid them. So it's very, very effective.
I see. So it's through the electron exchange. It's ionic. It's a positive and negative charge that causes the mechanical kill. Is that what you're saying?
Well, actually, yes and no. And Mark can jump in on this as well, as he's the real science guy. But the electronic charge is actually what draws bacteria in particular down onto the spike. And the spike, carbon spike, actually ruptures the cell wall. Now, in the case of viruses, the electronic charge is what does the damage to the virus. And Mark, I don't know if you want to elaborate on that a little bit more.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So the nitrogen molecule that's part of this spike carries a strong positive charge. And all microbes, so bacteria, viruses, mold, mildew, and fungi, they all carry a negative charge. And, you know, in school you played with magnets, and you know the opposites attract. So this field of molecular spikes, all those spikes have that positive charge to them. And a microbe with a negative charge, when it's introduced through touch, say I have, you know, contamination on my hand and I touch that treated surface, I'm going to leave some of that contamination behind, and those microbes are going to be immediately drawn to that positive charge. And in the case of a bacteria cell, the field of spikes are literally going to, like Jay mentioned, pop them like balloons. And once the cell wall is ruptured on a bacteria, it cannot survive. And furthermore, it cannot adapt to overcome this kind of physical kill. And in the case of a virus, you know, virus is different than bacteria. It's not a living entity. Technically, they're not living. They don't have a cell wall either, and they're very, very small. But when you have a field of all positively charged spikes on that surface actually becomes cationic. And so when a virus is introduced to a cationic surface, it's akin to electrocution. So it basically electrocutes the virus and inactivates it. So it can no longer infect, if you will. It can no longer do the virus thing. It's inactivated.
The virus thing, right. Right. Actually, I interviewed a cellular biologist recently who was saying that a virus, as inanimate as you're saying here, Mark, is more like a flash drive. It's a communication device. It holds information and brings it from one place to another. And that information is not, you know, generally, of course, healthy for us. And so if you're able to deactivate that information, it's like having a, you know, we use the word virus in the world of computers, mm-hmm. too. And if that information can't get transmitted, then the danger won't happen. A danger avoided,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, I really appreciate that. Please.
I like to think of viruses as hijackers. You know, they don't have their own car or plane or whatever. So they take over a living cell and, in essence, reprogram it.
Yes.
And then, essentially, that cell becomes a virus factory. And that's why when they get into our system, they can do so much damage because they just go crazy and it overtakes.
Yep.
But if you inactivate it, it can no longer do that, like you said.
Yeah. Yes. Talk about the hands, because what I've realized in getting to know the two of you and learning about the product line, you know, the hands are really basically considered another form of surface. Yet, you have a product that lasts for 24 hours of protection on the hands. 90 days, as you were saying before, Jay, on other surfaces. Talk about that, if you would, both of you.
Jay, you want to kick that off?
Has people scratch their heads. 24 hours, you know, because everybody has got, you know, the so-called Purell mentality, a squirt here and as many squirts throughout the day as possible, and then the bottle's used up, you know, in no time.
Certainly with classic hand alcohol-based hand sanitizers, you put them on your hands, and they do an effective job of killing, if it's left on the hands long enough, an effective job of disinfecting the hands, and they are disinfected until the moment that you touch something else, and they're then reinfected. Now, with this technology, what happens is that bond that Mark mentioned, that covalent type bond that Mark mentioned, that is formed with a surface, whether that surface be a countertop or whether that surface be a textile, or if that surface ends up being your hands, that chemical bond is still made. And in all practicality, that bond would last on your hands for 90 days if the surface of your hands lasted for 90 days. But the surface of your hands typically does not last 90 days. As we probably all remember, it's a common feature, a natural feature of our bodies to shed their skin cells. And so when that happens, if you've got the chemical attached to it, it is no longer attached to your body because it does not go inside your body. It attaches to the surface of your body. So that's one of the beauties of the product, is that it is not inside, you know, inside the cells of your body. It's on the surface of the cells of your body. So, but that being said.
Interesting. But you make a very interesting point here, Jay, which is that technically, because it is the same molecule as in the, you know, that you apply to a countertop, in effect, if the skin cells didn't shed and die off and get replaced, it would last for 90 days.
Yeah, that's in essence, all true. That's
in theory, right? Okay.
Yeah,
well, thanks for that elucidation. Very interesting.
Yeah.
It's a good way to think about it, though. Yeah. Anyway, please go on.
So that's how you get the long-lasting protectant. But it's because it's on your hands, attached to your skin. It actually is not impacted by washing. It's not impacted by additional, if you were to put alcohol-based hand sanitizer on your hand, it actually doesn't impact the product at all.
So interesting. Yeah, okay, thanks. That's very good. I mean, this is what people care about. I mean, of course, they care about surfaces, they care about clothes, and you mentioned textiles, and they care about their hands and their body. I mean, in a sense, even though you talk about it as for the hands, one could put it, you know, technically right on their face. Is there a reason why not? Or any part of their body, for that matter?
Well, we are not making any advice to do that. We've not run any tests in that regard, so I'll just refrain from commenting on that. But right now, you know, we use our product on the hands, and that's where we've done many independent tests as well as internal tests proving the efficacy of it on the hands and the safety of it on the hands.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll leave it at the hands for now. until further testing is done. But you bring up an important subject, which is testing. Now, I know you two have overseen and have conducted and have been conducted a lot of testing, both in universities, in hospitals, in assisted living residences, as well as in labs. Mark, could you elaborate a little bit on this and what the findings have shown scientifically?
Well, when you're talking about the testing that's been done on hands as well as surfaces, it's quite extensive. So with the hands, yes, the studies do show that it's effective. It provides an immediate sanitizing of the hands, and that the protection then continues to be effective out to that 24-hour mark, which is, you know, that's a game changer right there. You mentioned game changing before, Mitchell, and that's a game changer because your alcohol-based hand sanitizer at best gives you about 2 minutes of protection. So when you put that on your hands, and once the alcohol has evaporated completely, it cannot provide any more protection. It doesn't kill anything more at that point. And so literally inside of 2 minutes, you're back to ground zero and your hands can become contaminated again. So you got 2 minutes and up to 24 hours, a significant difference.
Completely. And the testing, I mean, this should be on every single surface, every single doorknob, every single pair of hands, you know, from here to kingdom come. I mean, literally, governments, agencies, corporations, I mean, everything, every restaurant, needless to say, movie theater, I mean, really, every bathroom, everywhere. If it had this, I mean, we keep using the phrase, but it's true, both game changer and, Jay, as you said earlier, paradigm shift. And it's up to us to get our brains kind of wrapped around the fact that science has developed and, you know, bright minds have developed such a molecular-based technology that can provide this kind of protection that, you know, the world has really not seen until now. So I'm very impressed. Tell us a little bit more, and then, Jay, I would love if you were to go into, you know, the actual products that are providing the protection. I'm sorry, was that something you started to say, Mark?
Yeah, I was just going to jump in there and just say, you know, I think it's important for people to genuinely understand, you know, how contamination and cross-contamination works, you know, in our lives, right?
Oh, so I think that's great. Yeah, please.
You know, you have a couple modes of transmission that are the primary modes of transmission, and really it comes down to surfaces, hands, and air. And so our technology and what we're talking about here today is, you know, deals with the surfaces and the hands. So it takes care of two of those primary modes of transmission. So 80%, this is according to a study that was done by the CDC, but 80% of cross-contamination happens via touch surfaces. So as an example, you mentioned a doorknob. A doorknob, I touch that doorknob, I leave behind some of the contamination that was on my hand. You come along a few minutes later or a few hours later, or, you know, in some cases, germs can live on surfaces for, you know, even up to a couple of weeks. But you come along at some point in the future, the next few minutes, and you grab that doorknob. You're going to leave behind some of what's on your hand, and you're also going to pick up some of what's on that doorknob. And so you multiply that by, in some cases, you know, the hundreds of people that use that doorknob every day. And now all those germs have been transmitted from person to person, person to person through that touch surface. And so then, you know, a person can become infected if it's let's say it's the common flu virus that's on there. Is I touch it, it's on my hand, and now I, you know, touch my face or whatever, and it makes its way into my body, and then all of a sudden I'm sick, and I'm wondering what happened, how did I get sick? I don't remember, you know, speaking with anyone or being with anyone that was sick. But you touched that doorknob, and so did a sick person, and so did 100 other people, and that's how things get transferred. So by treating that surface, that doorknob, and making it inhospitable to germs, now when I touch it and leave it behind, those germs are dealt with immediately. You come along a minute later and touch that doorknob, you're not picking up contamination off that doorknob.
What had been left before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we're cutting down, minimizing the risk of transmission through treated touch points. So that doorknob, that desktop, that countertop, that computer keyboard, telephone, handset, you know, whatever those touch surfaces are that you interact with, they all can be treated. So you're right. If this was on all the surfaces, it would dramatically reduce the risk of cross-contamination, because such a huge portion of cross-contamination happens through touch points.
80%?
Yes.
According to the CDC?
Yeah, 80%.
Does the CDC know about this product line?
They
we're
are becoming
working
more
that.
And more aware. Yeah, we're working on that, and there are specific campaigns in place to make that happen, Mitchell. You know, and that's actually a perfect segue, Mitchell, into kind of how we decided to attack the market.
Please.
As Mark just talked about, you know, these touch points are things that we focused on. So we really have three different product lines, if you will, that we focus on to address this. One is what we refer to as our liquid products or liquid protectants. And we talked about the hands. We have a hand product. It's called 24-Hour Defense. And it's the it's a foaming solution that you put on your hands. It's long-lasting. You apply it once a day, sometimes twice a day if you would like, if you're in heavy traffic. But that's one of the products. We have a surface protectant called EV360 that you use on surfaces, whether it's doorknobs, countertops, computers, lampstands, refrigerator handles, what have you. So you spray it on there, and that lasts up to 90 days in terms of protection. And then we have another liquid product called Laundry Shield, which is a product. It's a product you mix in with your laundry. It's actually a fabric softener. It has our product mixed in with it that provides protection for your
the molecule you
clothes.
Mean
the molecule is in the product,
the so-called great sacred molecule.
It goes into your clothes or your towels or what have you in your laundry, and it provides in particular it provides protection against odors, because odors are typically caused by bacteria. And microbes in your laundry. So that's our liquid products. Then we have a set of treated products, which actually are industrially treated by us. And the primary one that almost everyone on this call can resonate with is sponges, stinky kitchen sponges. You know, everyone has
we all know it.
And they all know it. We all know it, that they stink. But what most people don't realize is that your kitchen sponge is typically more contaminated, has more germs and harmful microbes on it than your toilet seat in your house. And that's disgusting.
Oh, my.
And so what we have done is we have developed a process to treat kitchen sponges and prevent them from harboring these bacteria and germs that cause odors that are so offensive to us. And we actually guarantee it for 90 days to not smell. It's called the No Stench Sponge. And that was such a huge success that we did the exact same thing with kitchen dish towels. So we have microfiber cloths that we've treated as well that are guaranteed to not stink for 90 days. And we also have a treated mop, a No Stench mop. So that's our treated product line. And then lastly, we do have a services line, services offering. And one of the things that we do, to just touch on this very briefly, is typically a lot of people are familiar with house cleaning services, things of that nature, where people come in and clean your house. And they might even actually disinfect your house. Not many people do that, but sometimes they do. They'll wipe things down with a bleach or some type of a disinfectant. And we've actually added two additional services to that, which are we provide protection. So we use our liquid products to protect your surfaces in your house for long term. And then the fourth thing we provide is we provide proof that they are protected. So we have a proprietary system that we have that we've developed and are deploying to people, especially homes, but we're also actually doing this with some businesses where they're applying our products, and then we're coming along behind and testing to prove that the surfaces, the homes, the doorknobs, what have you, those things are actually protected at antimicrobial or at a microbial level. So that's kind of in a nutshell our offerings. I want to just kind of outline what they are.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's very helpful. That's very helpful, Jay. It's interesting that, you know, that circles back to what I've been kind of asking about, which is, you know, both the science and the studies behind the products, sort of basically behind the molecular structure here, the technology that you refer to, and how that bears it out. And here you are saying that you actually provide a service that proves the efficacy and the long-lasting nature of the disinfectant and the protectant. So there you have it.
Yeah, Mitchell, we actually have a saying in our business, and one of the challenges we have is making the invisible visible. And that's part of this paradigm shift, coming all the way back to the beginning of the conversation, is that is the challenge. And we believe we've met that challenge. We have several ways that we've allowed consumers to have the confidence and assurance that we are mm-hmm. dealing with the problem at hand, which is the microscopic level problem that we can't see, that
yes.
provides, in history, has historically provided so much danger to us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really wonderful. Thanks for outlining that, Jay,
Mitchell,
because that really adds to the overall picture of the reality of what it is that we have here. Mark, please.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the kitchen sponge, the no-stench sponge, is, and Jay alluded to this, it is it's the easiest proof that people can, that they can tangibly hold on to, if you will. Because everyone knows
mm-hmm.
kitchen sponges and all that. We went over that. But the fact
sure.
that it doesn't smell a week after you start it, or 2 weeks, or a month, or 2 months, or even up to 90 days. And quite frankly, we've had customers that have contacted us and said, oh, you know, I've been using the same sponge for 6 months and it still doesn't smell. You know,
right.
But that's proof, because if it's not smelling, it means that it's successfully defeating all the odor-causing bacteria. And so it kind of makes it tangible. So if you want to know whether or not it works, try out the no-stench kitchen sponge, because that's the proof right there, the simplest
right.
proof. We have much more scientific ways of proving that it works, but that's a tangible way.
Yes, exactly. If you have any questions, smell your sponge.
mm-hmm.
Now, of course, there have been bacteriostatic sponges out in the marketplace, and products for that matter, for quite some time. So how would you say this is different than those?
Well, really, they're different in the same way that our product is different than the traditional disinfectants. Okay? So, there's been plenty of antibacterial sponges on the marketplace. But the way
mm-hmm.
in which they are antibacterial is when they're manufactured, they actually add in essence a little bit of liquid disinfectant, if you will, into the sponge.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is, one, those liquid disinfectants are, you know, they're poisonous, you know, to humans as they are to germs. But then,
mm-hmm.
but then secondly, it will rinse out. You know, it's only temporarily in the sponge.
Mm-hmm.
And our molecular spikes are literally infused throughout the fabrics and the materials of the sponge.
Yeah.
And so they really become a permanent part of that sponge. So they don't rinse out.
Got it. They're embedded. They're embedded in the fabric.
They are
itself.
Embedded.
Yep. And that's what happens, by the way, also, Jay, when you were speaking about the laundry shield, that the molecule gets embedded in the clothing. Is that a correct understanding?
Yeah, it actually attaches to, at a molecular level, the threads or fiber on the textile, whether it be your shirt or your towel or your dish rag, whatever that you put in your laundry, that actually acts like a surface. At the molecular level, the molecule thinks it's a surface, and so it just goes and attaches to that just like it would your countertop or your hand. And so now you have a treated textile product.
Amazing. Now, if your mask is a textile or washable and you wash it with the laundry shield, here I am going out of the box again, but just asking if you, you know, have thought this through at all or you have any experience with it, the mask then, I mean, one of the issues with the masks is that if someone actually is infected, they're re-inhaling. Mark, you mentioned, you know, air is one of the ways of transmission. They're re-inhaling the infectant in this case, you know. So if masks were washed with this molecule, with this technology, would that change the experience of mask wearing?
It would. It's a good point, Mitchell. The thing about the masks are you put the mask on and you go out into the world with the mask. And so whatever contaminants, you know, are out there in the air, some of those contaminants are being filtered out by that mask material. But they're still living or still active in the case of a virus, right? So if they are being filtered, then now your mask becomes a source of contamination, you know, the outside of it. But you go outside, you take your mask off, you've now touched that surface, you're passing it around, you know, you're moving those things around, and your own mask is
subject.
It's literally just another touch surface that can be contaminated. So if you were to treat that mask with our technology, then it would be just like the sponge. You know, whatever is being filtered out would then be dealt with. And so now your interaction with that mask would be on a safer level. And, just to be clear, it's not going to, turn that mask into a better filter. It is what it is. But what lands on the mask, what comes in contact with the mask, what does get filtered by the mask can be dealt with.
Yes. You see, this just goes back, gentlemen, to something we've all been saying in different ways of, Jay, when you said a paradigm shift. I mean, when you are dealing with a paradigm shift, when you realize that the Earth is actually no longer flat, and you realize that it's spherical, you have to make changes in your own mind and every way you live to realize that it's a different, no pun intended, it's a different surface. It's a different kind of atmosphere we're living in. So here, too, we are given the chance to review every aspect of our lives and how it's been affected by this infection and how we can really turn so much of our thinking around in light of, you know, this product line that you both are bringing forward. You follow my logic here?
Yeah, exactly. No, I think you're exactly right. It is a new way of thinking that we've got to come around to, and I think we're all very in tune with it now in the current environment. And so, I don't believe we've hit on this, but I do want to hit on it a little bit. Nothing is going to be foolproof. What we are looking for are ways to generally provide significant improvements to our safety and our well-being.
Yeah.
And this is one of the ways. There are many other ways that we can do this, you know, to do that for our own well-being. But this is one of the ways, and we believe that it is a very viable way, in a way that should really be considered.
Well put. Well put. So, last couple of questions before I ask you both to just add your last thoughts for our audience and all is number one. I mean, it's sort of evidently non-toxic. So could you just talk about that? And I imagine as a result of that, it's what you would call eco-friendly. Mark, Jay, could you comment on
sure.
that?
Sure. Yeah. I'll jump on that, and Jay, you can chime in too if I miss something. But, you know, when you talk about toxicity, our product, because it is so different, and we've been, you know, over and over about the paradigm shift, it really is so different in so many ways. One of the key differentiators is when you put a standard disinfectant on a surface, that is just literally on top of the surface. Now, if I touch that surface, I will pull away some of that disinfectant, right? You know, it comes off that surface, you know, until it completely evaporated, it would be transferable. Our technology, our spikes, are It's a bound technology. So when they bind to that surface through a covalent bond that's very strong, and they remain bound to that surface. So they don't leave the surface. They don't leech away to go do their work. All their work happens right there where they are bound to. So that's true whether that's in the sponge material of our no-stench sponge or on your kitchen countertop. So it's a bound technology. Therefore, when it is applied to a surface and bound, so once dry, it's considered completely non-toxic because it doesn't leave that surface. So me resting my hand on that treated countertop, I'm not going to absorb any of these spikes because they're now part of that countertop. So I'm not absorbing any in, so I don't have the risk of absorption. I don't have the risk of accidentally consuming. If I place my sandwich on the countertop momentarily because I forgot to grab a plate, none of the spikes are making their way onto the sandwich. It's all on the countertop. So it's a bound technology. That's the key. And so, again, you put it on your hands. Those spikes, they're seeking the first place they can covalently bond to. And so that's the outermost layer of your skin. They literally won't absorb into your skin because they bond immediately to the outside.
To them.
And then they remain bound. So now as I'm eating, et cetera, I'm not transferring those elsewhere. So it really is a very different approach. And so when you talk about that toxicity level, it's, significantly different. The other issue that you bring up is, from an ecological standpoint, what's the story? Well, in essence, carbon atoms, nitrogen, and a silane molecule that provides the bonding, in essence, we're talking about sand, wood, and air, to simplify it all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about a typical chemical here. So it's from an ecological standpoint, you're not introducing into your world really anything that's not naturally found. This is a special formulation of those natural compounds. Granted, but it is
surely
still carbon atoms, nitrogen, and a silane base.
Interesting. But, I want to just mention, though, that on one of the bottles I remember seeing, I believe it said something about, I'm not a chemist, ammonium something or other, some long word or two.
What is the
relationship of that to what you're saying?
When you basically, every compound has a long scientific name. No matter what you're looking at, right?
Mm-hmm.
The actual name, it's almost unpronounceable, of this compound. I think the actual name has more letters than the alphabet contains, right? It's one of those kinds of things. So
I've struggled with it a few times.
Yeah, I have too, and I've been working with it for years. So that's in essence what you're seeing there. I mean, on the label, you need to list what exactly it is, and that's the only way to do that is to use its full scientific
name,
if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But what it really is composed of is, as you said, nitrogen, carbon, and saline, you said?
Silane.
Silane.
It's a derivative of silica, if you will. So
that's the sand component, right?
Yeah.
So in effect, despite the appearance through the use of long-chained chemical words and names, it really comes down to the elemental form, something, Jay, you said to me quite some time ago, of sand and nitrogen and carbon.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah. So interesting. So interesting. So, well, thank you. Thank you for that explanation. I really, really appreciate it, because the people who listen to this show are rather eco-friendly and eco-sensitive, I should say, and are interested in things that are non-toxic. And I feel you've outlined and described the nature of the words versus the actual substance and understanding the inside of it a little bit, at least.
Yeah, and briefly, Mitchell, on the toxicity comment, we've had several studies done that actually prove the non-toxicity in terms of very sensitive living organisms, if you will, that are sensitive to any kind of toxicity. And so it's really been proven through independent testing that the chemical is non-leaching and non-toxic. So yeah, if someone really wants to dig into that, there's adequate independent lab studies that we can produce that provide that.
Excellent. Oh, that's so helpful, Jay. Thank you for that clarification. Really, really appreciate it. Well, last words, gentlemen. We've gone on way beyond. But that's just testament to how interesting this is and how much you both have to share about it. And it's whenever there is a paradigm shift, it's compelling, you know. It's like, tell me more. It's like one becomes very curious about how this works and that it's having the effect it's having. And it's changing everything. We've all been at a little bit of a low point over the last few months as a country. And to hear something as kind of uplifting and elating as this is, it's like, more, tell me more. I got to know. Liberate me from this situation.
And I'll let Mark give some closing comments. But let me just, as it relates to the paradigm shift, I always liken it to a horse and buggy and an automobile. Horse and buggies were a great way of getting from point A to point B. They did their job, and you got from point A to point B. When automobiles came along, it was a paradigm shift. Still, you were trying to accomplish the same goal, getting from point A to point B. But there was a lot of resistance in terms of, they're going to break down. They might be dangerous. They make noise. You know, all of the common things that we've heard in the past.
Sure.
But I would venture to say that the majority of society has now garnered on to the fact that automobiles probably have some advantages over horse and buggy. They still get us from point A to point B, but in a much more efficient, comfortable fashion. And so I kind of liken this new technology to that, in that it's going to take some education, take some learning, take some getting used to exactly how to utilize the technology. But once we're there, what we are finding that it is a much more efficient, much more practical way of protecting ourselves against the hidden dangers that we can't see.
Wonderful. That's great, Jay Johnson. Thank you so much for that and clarifying. It's really true. There's an old book called The Structure of Scientific Revolution, Thomas A. Kuhn, and it's all about how we move historically through different mental/scientific structural understandings, and it changes everything, and it takes a while for everybody to catch on and get past that resistance so the next understanding can emerge. So horse to buggy and to cars and airplanes, on it goes. And you guys are in a rocket ship, I think. Mark, last comments?
Well, I think, you know, we've covered a lot of material here today, and I think it's been a great conversation, Mitchell, so thank you for having us on and bringing this conversation to your audience. So thanks for that. And
oh,
I guess
you're so welcome.
The only parting comment I would have is, you know, again, dealing with a paradigm shift, you know, don't just clean, protect. And that's kind of our motto is that,
I like that.
Don't just clean, protect. And so that's what I'll leave your listeners with.
Thank you. You know, I realized there was an interesting omission, and that is that you also have a disinfectant. I know the overarching thing is about the protecting, but also you do have a disinfectant that works molecularly, hand-in-hand, complementarily with the EV360, the protectant. Is that correct?
That is correct. So we have a disinfectant that's called Smart Touch, and it is a very effective disinfectant, because the procedure for utilizing the EV360 is to disinfect, clean and disinfect the surface, and then apply the protectant. So if you apply the protectant to a non-clean surface, you in essence are going to protect whatever dirts and soils and things are on that surface instead of the surface itself. So it's kind of like, you know, you wouldn't put a fresh coat of wax on a dirty car, because you're just
waxing
the dirt.
You're right, just sealing it in.
You want to clean that surface.
Yep.
Clean the surface and then protect it.
So that is one of your, Jay, when you're describing the liquids, that is one of the liquids that you have as well.
Yes, it is. That's actually a fourth that I did omit from the list, but yes, that's correct.
Yeah, okay, great. Just so people see that there's this whole, you know, you have a comprehensive line of products here that, I like using them, I'll tell you that. And they're on my hands and in my body and, you know, on my surfaces all the time. So I have you both to thank for that. So Mark Whaley and Jay Johnson, thanks so much for being guests today. It was really a pleasure. And I look forward to speaking with you both soon.
Thank you, Mitchell. We really appreciate it. Yep.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I mean, that's a real learning experience. And I've been exposed to this. I've been using this now for some time. I had the pleasure of meeting these gentlemen some time ago, and I was just immediately taken with this technology. I knew, I recognized it as a paradigm shift back when we first encountered each other. And I've been very pleased to know them and to get to know the product line and use it myself. So on that note, I want to just thank all of you for tuning in today and being part of this here at A Better World. And I'd really suggest that you take a look at this and get some for yourself and on your own hands and be part of the paradigm shift and the benefit and the pleasure of riding in a new shiny car instead of the horse and buggy, as much as I love horse and buggies. This is Mitchell J. Raven for A Better World. Thanks again for joining, and visit us at our website, abetterworld.tv. Join our newsletter, free newsletter, announcing our weekly shows, and I look forward to seeing you all next time.